to the frenzy.
I'm Melissa Carter.
I'm Jen Hobby. What are you laughing at?
I'm laughing. Wait, here we are again. Number two. This is fantastic. It's so funny. Anyway, here's our mission statement and our promise to you, which is the frenzy is here to change the conversation around age.
So that you can celebrate all of your years rather than lie about them.
We are ready to share an honest and humorous take on what it means
to claim your real age while rejoicing in it.
I am Melissa, and I accidentally pepper sprayed my sorority sisters.
I am Jen, and I secretly host cooking shows in my mind when I fix dinner for my family. Coming up on today's show, our guest is Christy Paul. She is an author, a CNN anchor, a mom, and she is going to give you just that boost of confidence you need because she is a woman who is killing it in all areas of her life. But first, Melissa, how are you?
I'm good. I will say that something that I am struggling with that I know I will have to face when the pandemic is over is my relationship with my siblings. And the reason I say that is because Millie Pete, my mother, for those of you who listen to us on the air in Atlanta, she passed away last year. My father passed away back in 2001. So I'm officially an orphan, which is the weirdest feeling in the world. But I have two older siblings. It's weird because it's what does our relationship look like now that our parents are gone?
Does it shift? Because so many people go through that change. You know, I've got older parents, but still have both of mine. But when you lose them, I imagine it changes not only the way you feel, but how do you keep the glue together?
I think it's a reevaluation. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not a big proponent of family obligation. I know that sounds horrible because I think that I don't want my son to feel obligated to see me when he's older. Like Katie Jo, my baby mama, she and I, our idea is that we want Mr. Carter to want to come home to see us. We don't want him to feel obligated to come home to see us. So we don't plan on making him feel obligated to love us. We want that to be a natural thing. So when your parents pass away, all that's left is who you are. Like you don't realize, I don't think, how much you feel an obligation to make your parents happy to stay close with your sibling. Mm-hmm. In your mind, I think you're like, oh, I like my sibling. I don't like my sibling. But then when your parents are gone, you have to make a true judgment on that. So it's like,
And a real effort.
It's like we're here in Atlanta and I grew up near Nashville and my mother lived in Nashville the last decades of her life. So I would go to Nashville all the time. After she passed, I thought, I don't really feel like going to Nashville again. And that's you have to be honest with yourself. Mm-hmm. I've done that since I was 22 years old. I'm 50 now. I will be 51 when this pandemic is over. Mm-hmm. And that's a long time to make that drive. And so anyway, that's what I'm struggling with, almost having a come to Jesus meeting with myself on what do I really want in my relationship with my brother? And what do I want in my relationship with my sister moving forward? Because before it was this collective of the three of us as the children of my parents, where now it's like we're adults, happen to be related, but what does our relationship look like? And it's very different. I have a very different relationship with the two of them. Now I want that to reflect in our lives rather than us always having to cluster together as one.
Right. I was going to ask, is it different with your sister versus your brother?
Yes. I mean, yeah. I think my sister is 10 years older than I am. We're very different people. My brother calls us oil and water. Like we just don't mesh. We don't get each other. We love each other, but we just don't get each other. And so I think that there needs to be a limit on the tension in that relationship. Mm-hmm. Where my brother and I have always been close. And I don't want him to always feel caught in the middle of the fact that he and my sister are very close. He and I are close. And then she and I are not as close. And so like, I always feel like and that's always been the spiral because we always have to be home to see mom. We were home to see mom and dad. Like we were always together because of them. Well, now I have a son and I know there's a motivating factor there. And now it's like, I don't want a dynamic that is tense And for me to have to go through that just because I have a son that they want to see, if that makes sense.
At this age in our life, we're more confident in who we are. Like you said, we have more freedom to be who we want to be. And you have your own family to worry about. So it is a shift in relationships, right?
Right. Yeah.
And what you do now could be what you're setting up for the rest of your life. Are you going to continue to have these relationships out of obligation, or are you going to create them in a new way? Or are you going to maybe let them be less significant in your life, which is hard?
I think the struggle is if they were as honest as I was, we could just be honest, like, do you like me?
Are you
do
sure
I like
you?
You?
To be honest?
Well, and the reason I say that though, that's where you can have that lack of obligation moving forward. See, I think because I'm the youngest, I think they're so used to telling me what to do that it's very hard for me to be able to express myself and it be respected, right?
Even at 50 years old.
Even at 50 years old.
You still feel like the little sister.
Yes, absolutely. And because my siblings are 10 and 8 years older than I am. So I had two sets of parents. It wasn't like we didn't go to school together. We didn't hang out together. We didn't party together. I was always their kid sister. You know, there's a part of me, it's like, I wish we could just be honest, but too many people want to honor their parents with their relationship with their siblings. They just, and it's not that I don't want to honor my father and mother, but it's like, I kind of, as the baby, want to be released from that obligation. I want to be released from all this and be able to be that adult and seen as an adult. But I don't
have, you know, been able to express that to them directly yet?
That's what I'm saying, Jen. I am struggling with that because during the pandemic, I have the space. Now, Millie Pete did not die of COVID, but she did die during the pandemic. I've had this time because I'm a kidney transplant recipient. I have been hunkered in my house since March of, 2020. And
yeah, we're doing this podcast via StreamYard. So Melissa and I can see each other and talk, but we are separate. We're not in the same studio.
That is correct. And so my siblings live in Nashville. And so we haven't been together. And I know that as soon as this is done, I mean, they will have gone a year without seeing their nephew in person. So, I mean, imagine, I mean, he's six now, mm-hmm. How much he's grown and changed in that year. So I know there'll be this huge motivation to get together so that they could see Mr. Carter, which I respect. You know, when that happens, what is it going to be like? Because it'll be the first time that all of us will be together without any parents. What is the conversation like? Well, of course, now we have to still plan my mother's service because we couldn't have a service.
Well, if I know you, it's going to be honest, right? Like, I don't think that you're the type of person who fakes it through a situation like that. Like, it's not like you're going to go right in front of your son and have these conversations, but I cannot imagine you spending an entire long weekend or week or whatever with your sister and brother without having real honest conversations. So that's what I love about you is that
you're one of the few that love me for that.
You're not afraid of the difficult conversations. And that's awesome because so many people would rather kind of keep the peace and keep it small talk and sweep it under the rug and just like barrel through it without really going there. But that's what I admire you is you aren't afraid to have those really tough conversations, but it's so important. And so necessary in order for that relationship to be real.
My goal is I want their relationship with my son to be the best it can be. I think that different relationships, different ways you're related are different relationships. So just because, like I mentioned, my sister and I are not the tightest, but I don't want that to reflect on her relationship with my son. Like, I'm not going to get in anybody's way, but I don't want to have to endure any discomfort. I mean, I want to live the rest of my life as worry-free as possible. And that's why I'm not a big fan of family obligations, because so many times family obligations equate to stress. I don't think that that's fair.
And I think that's a really freeing thought, of any of our audience members who are struggling with those same type of relationships. It may not be a sibling. It may just be somebody in your family where you just feel so obligated to have to take care of them or fake through this relationship or whatever. But you reach a certain age where it's like, cut the crap. Right. I don't have to do this anymore. And I think that's really freeing to hear you open up about that.
And it has no reflection on the character or how wonderful each person involved is. I mean, that's the other thing is like, sometimes when you're related and you're not as, it's not, nobody's bad. There's no bad guy. There's no good guy. It just is what it is. And that's the thing, is it just is. And I'd rather it be is than be, you know, this dream of what it could be when after this long, it hasn't been that. So it's not going to be that. And I don't know. I don't like my chest being tight. I want the chest to not have to be tight. I'm a grown woman. I'm a grown ass woman.
And, you know, sharing those kind of struggles that we're all going through is really what The Frenzy is all about. We wanted to start this show together to talk about the real things going on in our lives, the honest, the funny parts of it, the not so funny parts of it, because we're on this journey with you to find answers. You know, we want to share our lives and get to a better place together, because life can be really hectic unless you got your friends.
Right. Exactly. The frenzy. Exactly.
And someday we have to tell the story of the struggle and naming this.
You talk about a struggle. That's a whole series of episodes to talk about that. I mean, and to Jen's point, I feel like our parents complained about these things, our grandparents, like it's time to really face these things as women of our age, of an older age, to make a change so that our daughters and granddaughters will have more freedom. I mean, we're here to serve you, but we're also here to serve future generations.
And it's like, if you're in this chapter, like Melissa's going through this big change with her siblings, so many of us are going through career changes, especially after COVID. So many of us are having this big change in family structure. If you're on this precipice of a new chapter, or you're feeling this change in your life going on, you're not alone. And that's what we want to make sure that you get out of The Frenzy, is that you're not alone. You are here with friends. Coming up, we've got a surprise for our very first subscribers who leave us a 5-star review. We've got a really cool prize. It's an all-new Echo Dot 4th generation smart speaker with Alexa.
We got show and tell. It's a box with an Echo Dot inside.
Yes.
Jen's holding up.
It is here to make your life much easier and allow you to listen to The Frenzy when you are prepping dinner in the kitchen, or when you are getting started for your day and putting your makeup on, or blow drying your hair and you got your AirPods in. You can just tell your Echo Dot to do whatever you need to do and make your life a little bit easier.
I know someone who, they start their day by just asking Alexa, tell me the headlines, play my playlist. To me, it's very sci-fi. I'm a sci-fi fan. It's very Star Trek. You know, computer, can you do this? Alexa, can you do this? And there you go.
And all you have to do is leave us a 5-star review and subscribe to the podcast, and then you're automatically entered and we'll draw at random.
So you got to try this new game, You Don't Know My Life With Your Friends. All right. So You Don't Know My Life is a game about the quirky little experiences that make us all human. The details are different. We've all had our triumphs and heartbreaks, pop culture moments, totally changed our lives, mortifying things that happened to us when we were teenagers, sometimes in front of the whole school. And we have all kinds of stories. So you skip past the small talk, truly connect with people around you, and celebrate your own crazy life, all while laughing your face off. So grab a pencil, join the party. You've already got the answers. You Don't Know My Life, now on sale at Amazon for just $31.99. It's perfect for your next Zoom party or family night for the, you know, the family that you party with. Jen and I are actually going to play around later in today's episode.
Okay. And you'll get stories out like why you tased your sorority sister accidentally.
Pepper spray.
Oh, Taze. Why did I think Taze?
Well, Taze could be, if I had a sorority sister I was tasing with, that may be a completely different evening. But no, I accidentally pepper sprayed my sorority sister.
Look forward to our next round of You Don't Know My Life coming up here in just a few minutes. But first, we are so excited to share with you this awesome conversation with Christy Paul. She is a book author. She is a TV anchor, a mom, an all-around rock star. You'll see her every morning on CNN New Day and throughout the week on HLN. Please help me welcome to The Frenzy, Christy Paul.
Yeah, I'm so excited. You know I love you guys so much, but to know that you are both going to be in my phone on my podcast every Monday, life is good.
Oh, yay, Christy.
Excited to hear that from you. Now, Christy, of course, CNN anchor, author, singer, mom of three girls. You have been doing so much and accomplished so much in your career and in your life on such a world stage, but your story began in a small town. So can you tell us a little bit about your roots and where you came from?
Rural Ohio. A little town called Bellevue, which is near Sandusky, Cedar Point, the big amusement park. That's where most people go back to, you know, memories of Ohio, if you're anywhere up north near Lake Erie, which is where I'm from. I still have some of my best friends are from high school. I see them when my grandmother died last year or two. I guess it's almost been 2 years ago. They showed up. They showed up. For me. They have always shown up for me. I try to be there for them. And I think those are those kind of lasting friendships that you can't get away from. But I have a brother who's 6 years younger than me. My parents are retired. My dad retired when my husband and I got married. We took him to Hawaii and said, hey, we're getting married in Hawaii. And dad said, I think it's a good time to retire. So he was an attorney. My parents taught me a lot about service. My dad was the attorney for the school board and did stuff for the church. And my mom was a kindergarten teacher. And she has all these great stories about the things kids say, as we know. I will say that when I got married the first time, I'm divorced. I was in this marriage for 4 years. It was abusive. The pastor at my first wedding, I swear he knew. I mean, I swear a lot of people knew. It was probably one of those moments where people are looking at me and they just thought, can I just yank you out of the church right now? But his whole sermon to us on my wedding day was, remember your roots. 4 years later, when I was contemplating leaving, that message was what kept coming back because I realized that I had become somebody I didn't even recognize anymore. When you go through a situation where you are with someone who is addicted to something in a way that it changes who they are and it's scary. He was an alcoholic, not admittedly so, for many, many years later. I remember having this moment where I went to visit a friend of mine in Chicago. And as soon as I got off the plane, I just felt like I was home. We were living in Phoenix at the time and I didn't want to go back. And within a month I left because I got home to, you know, the Midwest.
Yeah.
To a place where I felt safe. Mm-hmm. I felt valued. I felt like myself. And it was the first time I had felt like that in about 4 years. So I wrote about that, about looking back 4 years earlier and how the pastor just kept saying to me, you know, Pastor Roger, remember your roots. Remember where you came from. Remember who loves you. I really feel like it was his way of saying, You're gonna have to remember this.
You're gonna need to come back home here when this all falls apart. Isn't it wild how other people can know the future, our future, or what we're about to face before we can? And I've read your book. And
yes,
oh my gosh, it's such a powerful story, and it reads like a movie. You know, where at points I couldn't breathe, and I was like, oh, I had to get to the next page to get past this part. She's going through such a hard time. But it really is so impactful and vulnerable. Why did you want to put this out there and share it?
It's funny you mentioned the movie part because I've had a lot of people say to me, I feel like it's a movie and you're like turning the corner and I want to yell at you. No, look behind you.
Yes.
Like a horror movie. I had just had my third daughter. My husband was out playing hockey. And I should point out, because I get this question a lot, all of my children are with my husband now, Peter. I was home one night by myself. And you know, when you have three children, rarely do you get a night's sleep. But I just had this incredible desire to write. So this is what I started writing, because I realized, you know, this is very real. This happens to so many people. And I came from a family where I don't even know who was ever divorced in our family. None of my aunts, uncles, my parents had been married 50 years. I felt like I wanted my daughters to know that I had been through this so that if it ever happened to them, they would know that they could come to me because I know about it on a very raw level. And I wanted to share with them and other people what red flags are. because we tend to shut that aside when what's in front of us is something that we really want, and we will kind of put on a mask or put a veil over it and make it look better than it really is. You know, I was just having a conversation with somebody that I said, you can't fall in love with potential. You got to look at what's right there.
Yeah, that's a hard lesson to learn.
Yeah. And I learned it, you know, I learned it.
I feel like our stories are very similar. Yeah. I was married previously too. I'm divorced and remarried. My two daughters are with my husband now, Grant, but there were very similar themes from your book and what you went through to what I went through. And I just found it so brave for you to share it, because there are a lot of things that I still want to hide from it, because you feel shame around, how did I let that happen? How did I let my life look like that?
That is so, that's deep. And I applaud you for even talking about it, because I did it because of my girls, but also because I was having these conversations. I mean, at one point, and you will know this then, Jen, because of what you've been through, I was writing in the book one night, and it was a really difficult thing to write about. It was one of the really awful moments that I write about. And you have to be authentic, you kind of have to go back there.
Yes.
And you don't want to go back there. And I remember sitting there and I was crying, and I just thought, I just like pulled away from the computer, and I said, I can't do this. I just can't do it. And literally the phone rang, and a friend of mine who was living in DC at the time and was engaged to get married within 2 months called and said, he's doing the exact same thing, you know, that I call him Justin in the book, that Justin did. She said, it's just happening over and over. She said, I don't think I can do this. And you're the only one I thought I could call and who would understand and walk me through it.
Wow.
And I kind of got, I talked with her. I got off the phone. I looked at the computer. And I'm like, all right, I'll keep going.
Yes.
Because what we lived then, people are living now. And mm-hmm. she was living it. And you're right. And I mean, I give you, it takes a lot of, you mentioned shame. It takes a lot to try to get over that, because it's, I always say, it's funny that you were essentially a victim of abuse, but you're the one that feels the shame.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the first time, it is a gift to give somebody forgiveness for that. Especially if you're married, I think you feel, especially women, a real need to try to fix it, you know, to remedy it, to stick with it. And then when it happens again, and then it happens again, and every time it happens, it's like another block of bricks on your shoulder, just taking you down and down and down and down, because you let it, you're looking at it thinking, I let it happen, so I deserve that it's happening now because I haven't done anything about it up to this point. I mean, we really do, our internal, what our mind tells us sometimes is our own worst enemy.
Yes, I agree. And also, I don't think that your minister, even if he had said, don't do this, you would have listened, right? Sometimes you have to go through it to really get it, rather than somebody on the outside telling you, you need to walk away.
Gosh, is that true? You are so right about that one. I will say, I got therapy right afterwards when I left. I got a lot of therapy, and I continue to get therapy. And one of the things that my therapist had me do was something that's called the DeMartini method. So I had to make these lists of how that served me, because I told her, I want to get out of this and understand why I allowed some things to happen, why I married him in the first place, because, I mean, Jen knows, based on what I wrote, there were all kinds of signs that I shouldn't do it, but I did. But she said to me, by the time we're done with this, you're going to be able to say thank you that you went through this. And I looked, I was, you are off your rocker. There's no way that's going to happen. Yes. And do you know, I wouldn't try, I would go through it again if I had to. Wow. I mean, it would be horrible, obviously, but the appreciation I have for people, for kindness, for authenticity, for strength and bravery, the forgiveness that I have that I didn't have before. One of the lists that she made me make was the benefits of verbal abuse. And when she said it, I...
Doesn't even make sense.
Right. You go... And she had to clarify it with this, and I think this is what helped. She said, I'm not saying what happened to you was okay, but it did happen, and we can't change that. You have to decide not to let it wreck the rest of your life. I ended up with like 65 answers to that question. For instance, it taught me how to be more independent because I couldn't depend on him for anything. I mean, everything was a blow up. I had to take care of Bill. I had to take care of everything. It helped change my idea. And I know you guys will probably relate to this as well, as to what marriage really is. I used to think, well, you know, if I saw people together, at least they're married, you know, they have somebody to go through life with. And then you go through this and you go, well, I'd rather be alone than be with the wrong person.
Yeah.
And it taught me a lot about forgiveness. That was probably one of the biggest ones, because it wasn't just forgiving him, it was forgiving me.
I wanted to ask you about this one part of the book because it was so impactful to me. Is it okay if I read your words back to you?
Absolutely.
So this is when you are getting some therapy with Dr. Case.
Yeah.
And you write, I was amazed at the gravity of words, how a simple utterance can act as a chain, binding us to a perception for much of our lives. When words are used against us, intentionally or not, we often become imprisoned by them. If we start to see those words from a new angle, we are freed from their power. And in my case, I was also freed from the man who targeted me with those words. For our listener who is maybe going through something, can you expand on that? How do you take those words that have been so painful and become part of your narrative and change them?
Well, I mean, part of mine, I think my strength in recognizing that was just the practice of being mindful of my own words from that point on and recognizing the gift. And I know that it sounds crazy, but the gift that it was for me to go through that, to recognize the impact of words. I never wanted them to use words like that to hurt somebody because I knew how it felt. We had a doctor on a few weeks ago who was talking about COVID and, you know, people who don't want to wear masks and, you know, to each his own. But in a situation like this, it's just so necessary in the 6 feet apart. And she said, the only way that you're really going to understand COVID is if you get it. And we don't want you to get it. It's the same thing. I would not wish what I went through on anybody, but it taught me. And one thing that it taught me that I think is most valuable to myself and to my relationships is the power that is in the words that you use. Mm-hmm. And it makes you very mindful, not just of the words themselves, but of the tone you use as well. Mm-hmm. Because what, the way you talk to your kids, the way you talk to your spouse, the way you talk to your parents, your friends, if you have been hurt by words, hurting somebody back with them is not going to remedy anything.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You learn to find that gentler, more understanding, more forgiving, more empathetic you.
As you talk and as Jen reacts, and I react to the fact that you wouldn't want to wish this on anybody, but it can be seen as a gift. You know, the frenzy, we started this so that women who are older understand that their experience is also something to rely on rather than to dismiss, right? So our goal is for women not to feel dismissed or expired. Your words are that. It doesn't matter what you've been through. The fact that you've been through it and that you're wise from it, or should be wise from it, that you have yourself to lean on. And a lot of women, I think, are resistant to do that.
Yeah, because, I mean, I was resistant to do it because you feel so broken. And you almost feel like you're buried, and how am I going to dig myself out of this pit? You can't do it alone, and that's okay. You know, I've talked to so many people and just try to let them know you are allowed to walk away from a relationship like that. You are allowed to walk away from somebody who's disrespecting you or talking to you in a manner that's abusive or harsh. And I know that's hard if it's somebody at work or a boss or in a situation like that. But I think that we tend to sit in our brokenness. And if we sit there too long, we're allowed to sit there for a while because you have to process it, but you have to get yourself out of it. And rarely will you do it by yourself fully. That's why I love the frenzy. That's what friends are for. I mean, you have to have, I have learned as I, and I say this all the time, not as I get older, because I'm not afraid of getting older. I'm always the, listen, age, weight, and salary is a number, and you're not a number. But I like to say as I grow up, because even though I'm 52, I feel like I'm still growing up. And as I grow up, I realize that it's less important to have a lot of friends and it's more important to have real ones. Mm-hmm. And you will find them as you go. Lean on them, because that you, I'm sure you as a friend would let somebody lean on you. Don't be afraid to lean on those people that you really genuinely believe are for you.
Because they want to. They want to step up and help you. It's like you're almost doing your friend a favor by asking for their help and asking for their support. But sometimes as women, I feel like we think we've got to have it all together. We've got to have all the answers. You know, we're the moms. We're running our households. We're running the careers. We're doing all the things. And we're supposed to have all the answers. So when you go through hard things, it's like you got to take a step back and ask your friends for help when you need it and recognize when you do need it.
You're so right that they'll love to do it. And if they don't, then you know that's not somebody that you go back to.
Right.
People will show you who they are.
It's okay to walk away from a situation with a friend who's not on your side, who's not for you, who's manipulative, right? So, I mean, it's not just about an intimate relationship. This could be a friendship, too, that you have to choose yourself and the people that are there to be on your team.
And that's why I think friendships, I have a lot of friends. I have 3 or 4 in my core that know everything, that I can call and I can be as vulnerable and probably stupid and, you know, having my moments with hormones like this, you know, especially at this age too. They help, they talk me off the ledge. They remind me of who I am when I forget. We do, from experience, gain so much wisdom. We also forget it. When we get older, it is nice to be validated. That's something else I've learned. You know, I wonder, I catch myself going, okay, where am I looking from? Where am I getting my validation? I can't get it from the numbers on television. I can't get it from social media. I mean, it's nice when somebody's kind. Don't get me wrong. My validation has got to come from me. It's from faith and from God. Because when I was going through my divorce, I remember watching Oprah. And Matthew McConaughey was on, and she was asking him, you know, you're so famous, and how do you balance it? And how do you keep yourself in check without getting really arrogant or anything? And he said, well, first and foremost, I know I'm a child of God, and that's enough. And that has stuck with me for 20 years.
And I would imagine in your career in television, there are a lot of different messages coming at you about your value, about what you can do. And you're in this anchor chair, right? You've covered presidential elections, then Vice President Biden. You've talked to celebrities. You've covered really difficult events throughout the world. Do you, when you're in that anchor chair, have to put on an armor?
I have cried on the air. It's just me. I've had to be saved by my anchor on more than one occasion, just based on some of the things, not the politics per se, but, you know, the stories, the immigration stories we've done the last few years. I will be very honest with you. I can tell you the worst day of my life on the air was the Newtown shooting. We covered the first 4 hours of it. I sat at the desk with Mike Alanos. We got an email that said, we were talking to a woman who was at the fire station where they were having all the parents come. And she was just telling us they've taken all these parents into a room and they're sequestered and we don't know what's going on. But this woman we were talking to had a child. And we got an email. I can't even say this still to this day, but we got an email that was not for air yet. We couldn't go with it yet. But it said, there is an entire kindergarten class that is unaccounted for. And at that moment, Mike and I had been in the business long enough to know all of those parents were being taken into that room to say their child died. And this is what I did. Like, I just shut down and Mike took over. And then we got to another point where Mike shut down and I had to take over. I think you do it enough where you can step, I have to step out of the moment that I'm in and do what you need me to do. You need to hear what's happening. So that will take precedent in this moment. There have been more times that I can count that I have gone to my car after something like that or really anything that hit me. And I will sob before I come home.
Just to let it out and let it go, because you have to hold it all together.
One of the things too about news coverage I wanted to ask you about is news coverage of older women. You know, how do you think women in general, and especially older women, are they portrayed fairly or are they portrayed enough?
They're probably not portrayed enough. We're so deep into politics right now And you look at the ages of women that we're covering, you know, Nancy Pelosi, obviously the new vice president. These are not women who are young. They're not teenagers. They're not on social media, you know, doing all kinds of crazy things to get attention. I do think that we're doing okay. I don't think it's the news. I think it's the reaction to the news sometimes that can be really harsh, that, you know, people who don't appreciate what we're covering or what we're saying. But I've had a lot of people ask me if I have been treated differently as a woman. I probably have. I can't say that I noticed it so much because I just go do my job. I am a person who feels very strongly. I have this conversation with my daughter, Sophie, because she's very sensitive. She's very strong, but she's very sensitive. And I told her, don't ever let anybody make you feel badly for being sensitive, because it means that you're empathetic and it means that you care about people. And if you're going to cry, that's okay. Sometimes you have to go cry separately. Don't let somebody make you feel less than because of who you are, because God made you that way. I think I've had to grow a really thick skin. So there was one time we were talking, Mike Alanis and I were talking to, I wish I could tell you who it was because it would be hysterical. Mike got into a tit for tat with this guy. They were going at it. And the guy said on the air, "I don't want to talk to you anymore. Let me talk to that pretty girl next to you."
Oh.
And I went, "Okay, my name is Christy." You know, sometimes things just come out of people's mouths. But right. I would be more interested to know what you think about how older women are covered. I mean, J-Lo's 50, people.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, it's funny how you... I think that when you talk about politics has allowed us to have these leaders, and obviously they're leaders because people have voted them there, right? So the general public wants them there. So you make a great point that politics, to me, has spearheaded this effort that I hope continues in other genres of women who are older, who are doing new things.
Do you feel like it's hard, though, when you see... you know, what's happening? I mean, social media is so powerful. Mm-hmm. The conversations on TikTok and Instagram and Twitter, you know, how much do you think that leads us to our perceptions of older women?
I think it depends on who you follow. And I think it depends on what messages you're engaging with. That's what they're serving up to you more. But I think you're right. And it comes back to a lot of what you talk about in your book about how powerful words are, mm-hmm. and how powerful social media can become when it's used as a weapon and it's used to demean other people. It can be really an awful place, but then it can be a really positive place too. It just kind of depends on who you surround yourself with in that digital space.
That is so key, because I know on Instagram, I follow a lot of really positive things.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And if you're seeing that inspiration and women helping women and lifting each other up, or you lean on your faith a lot, you know, if you're following accounts that lean on their faith, it's great reminders, because you're like, oh, there's my friend and her kids, or oh, there's a funny video, and oh, there's an inspirational message. It can be great, but you can also go down a wormhole of like hatred and disgust, yeah. And you know, these people who are just spewing out all of their ugly words into the world to make themselves feel better, I guess. I don't know. I've had a shift in the last couple of years. If I see that happening, I'm like, there's something really sad going on inside that person.
Yes.
All those attitudes come from the home.
As parents, what we say in front of our kids, not only just to them, but what we say in front of them, mm-hmm. really matters. In this house, I've always been very careful about, we talk about health, we talk about strength. You know, I force them to do yoga with me because they're soccer players, and I'm going, you got it. You know, you got to work all of this out. You're going to be a better player. You're going to be stronger. You're going to be faster. You're going to be more limber. And the same thing with eating. I mean, I've got a sugarholic in my house, and I just try to do that. You got to balance it. You can have that, but you got to have these green beans first or something.
Talk about that, because obviously that's your most important job, is your mom of three young girls and raising them. Talk about like the things that you do intentionally to make sure you're raising them along this path to know that women are strong and that they can do anything they want to do.
The funny thing is, my husband and I laugh at this. My husband's a chemical engineer, and I think he's brilliant. I mean, he's just an awesome, awesome guy all the way around. Because I've always worked, I mean, we've moved for my career, and I always give him so much credit, first of all, for that. And secondly, when Sadie, well, when we had Ava and Sophie, Sophie was about 6 months old, Ava was two, and we were in a position where, okay, are we going to get a nanny? Are we going to take them here? What are we going to do? And I said, are you going to stay home? And he said, well, I'm going to stay home because I don't want somebody else raising my kids. And that was just our choice. But I always give him so much credit for that, because it's not like boys grow up going, I think I'll stay home with the kids. Mm-hmm. You know? It's just not the narrative that they ever hear or see. And he'll tell you the first year was hard, but he said after about a year, he went, oh, this is my job. And then it just clicked for him. Many years ago when they were really little, he was talking about something that happened one day when he was at work, you know, before this, and they looked at him and they went, you went to work? You know, so they are just kind of living in a space where this is what I do, and he supports me and I support him, because he works at the kids' school. They're really good about, on Friday and Saturday nights, I go into my room at between 3 and 4 o'clock, and I will study for about 3 hours, maybe four, try to get to bed by 7, because I'm up at between 1:30 and 2. They just know this is what I do.
You've got to follow Christy Paul TV on Instagram, and you're always sharing all kinds of different news stories, what's going on at CNN, and of course, we can see you at the anchor desk. Are you doing your weekend show on Saturday and Sunday from home? Are you going to the studio?
No, we go into the studio, but it's very, very different. You know, we used to have, I don't know, maybe 25 people there when we got there. There's four. Wow. People are working from home, and Victor and I are in separate studios that are right next to each other, but we're in separate studios. This has really been such a joy, and I admire you both so much. And I love that you're doing this, because I think I heard you say, and I can't remember where it was, but you were talking about how it might have been on Instagram. You were talking about how we don't need to wait for somebody to give us permission to do what we want to do. I think we do that. I think we kind of wait to see, is there a green light? Is there an opening? Is there, you know what? If there's something that you really want to do, figure it out and do it. And you're doing that. And so you're an example of that. But even bigger than that, you're an example of having these conversations that matter. So thank you for what you're doing. More power to the frenzy.
Don't Know My Life, which is a board game that Dennis Hensley, who's a friend of mine, a former colleague of mine, he and a partner created this game. It's a board game, and you get to know about your friends, some things that you never knew before. Okay, so here's an example. We're going to play a round. I'm going to ask a question to Jen. I'm going to answer the same question. Okay.
Okay.
What's a fun fact or random bit of knowledge that has stuck with you from your days in school?
Oh, that's a good question. And all of these jog my memory so well, because that is not my strong suit, my memory.
Yeah, I'm going to give you a chance to think and explain that the beauty of this game is Jen and I've known each other for decades. I've known other friends for decades, and I will learn things about them that I never knew about through these questions, because you don't think to ask, hey, Jen, what is something that you remember from your school? I mean, like, that doesn't come up in conversation, right?
Like a bit of knowledge from your school days. I'm trying to think, like, would it be from an English class or math or history or...
I'll answer it. Okay. Since I got to see it first, I'll answer it. It's one of those little Southern things that is carrying a buckeye in your purse. Have you ever heard of this?
No. What is it?
So apparently it's supposed to give you luck.
What's
if you carry
a buckeye.
So a buckeye is a kind of nut.
Sorry, I don't know.
It's okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. It's a kind of nut. The weirdest mascot, I think, is the Ohio State Buckeyes. Their mascot is the nut. It's a buckeye. It's his face is a nut and it's got a body. Anyway, okay. But it is a kind of nut. And the idea is you just carry it on you. And it's supposed to bring you luck. And it's this old wives' tale. So the first thing I thought about is all through my life, I would carry a buckeye in my purse. I carried it in high school. I carried it in college. I carried it after college. When I started working in radio, we got in the habit of either carrying a backpack or a briefcase or something, you know, that's not I don't carry both. I don't carry a purse and a briefcase. I'll just put all my stuff in a briefcase. So I got out of the habit when I started doing that and didn't have it.
Tell me that one of your fancy friends just got you a Coach backpack?
Yeah. I know.
Because my first got this really fancy honor. Tell everybody about your honor, first of all.
A friend of mine from high school who I'm still dear friends with, who lives in Knoxville, I'm honored to be on the advisory board, the LGBT advisory board for Mayor Keisha Bottoms, who's the mayor of Atlanta and who President Biden has nominated as the vice chair of the Democratic National Committee. So I am on her advisory board. So basically, I help guide her through decisions for the LGBT community here in Atlanta. And I'm on a board with several other men and women. And so when I got named to that advisory board, my friend in Knoxville said, I've got a gift for you and I'm going to send it your way. And I said, okay, cool. And it was a Coach bag. It was a Coach little backpack that was rainbow colored.
And there's now going to be a buckeye in it.
And now there's going to be a buckeye in it. That's okay. Right. My buckeye and my rainbow bag.
Okay. What's one little thing from my school days? See, I was thinking factoid or something like that.
Yes, whatever comes to mind.
Oh man, Melissa, I wish I had a really great story. My dad always said, take care of your hands because people pay attention to your hands. So I don't know if he walked by one day and I was like maybe biting a nail or something. I've never been a real nail biter, but maybe this is why. Because my dad said, you know, you should always take care of your hands, take care of your nails, take care of your hands, men or women, because people notice.
This was before the time where men felt comfortable going into the salon and getting their nails buffed and stuff. So my father, every morning.
Yeah. My dad would have never done that.
Yeah. My father, every morning, and he would take chapstick and put it around his cuticles to soften his cuticles. That's what he used.
I don't know what that is.
And
about.
He had beautiful
Our
hands.
Parents' generation. Yeah. My dad's got great hands too. He's never, not one time ever complained about my mom going to get her nails done or whatever. Like he always said that, just take care of your hands and have a firm handshake and look people in the eye.
And the beauty of that is I'm glad your father said that to you because a lot of fathers would have skipped over to their daughters and just said that to their sons. Right.
So No, not my dad. We were all the same and I had to mow the lawn more than my brother.
Yes, my father. Yes,
my all three of us got away with playing while I had to go do yard work because we lived in Florida and nothing ever died. There's no seasons in Florida; it all just grows all the time.
I learned a lot and had a lot of like green stained grass shoes from that.
Well, we want to say thank you so much to Dennis for sponsoring the podcast. And we want to say thanks to you for listening. So leave us a 5-star review and subscribe to the podcast and you're automatically entered to win this really cool prize. It is a Amazon all new Echo Dot 4th generation smart speaker with Alexa. We're really excited to give that to somebody. And just by leaving a 5-star review and subscribing to the podcast, you're already entered to win. You don't have to do anything else. And if you like this show and you want to share it with a friend who you think could use this kind of conversation, please share the episode. Just go ahead and forward it to her text message right now. And if you like this, you can screen grab it and tag us online at The Frenzy on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and Twitter.
Musical score has been brought to you by Atlanta musician Tammy Hurt. The Frenzy's graphic design is by Helen Vickers and web design by Caden Jacobs.
And next week, we're going to share with you ways to reframe your inner voice around your own age. And we'll give you a new mantra to try in the mirror. So make sure you subscribe and we will see you next week.
Trust your gut.
Use your voice.
Stop lying about your age.
We'll see you next time.